John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my rock?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, October the 3rd, 2011. Israel claims that accelerating settlement activity is a right of Israel, not punishment for seeking international recognition, and two aid ships draw ever closer to the Gaza Strip in an attempt to deliver supplies and break the siege. These stories and more coming up, so stay tuned. Palestinians have expressed their outrage after the Israeli government made a decision to withhold tax revenue due to be delivered to the Palestinian Authority to the tune of millions of dollars. The decision in question came after the United Nations Education, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, had voted to grant Palestine full membership. More than 150,000 PA employees are uncertain about receiving their full salaries in the coming weeks. Despite withholding the tax revenue, Israel continues to increase its settlement activities within the West Bank and East Jerusalem, with Tel Aviv expressing that they are not mutually linked, and the Israeli government is not punishing the Palestinians for seeking international recognition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu claimed that their decision to escalate the construction and expansion of Jewish settlements is a basic right to Israel and is not a punishment to the Palestinians for gaining full membership at the UNESCO. He further affirmed that Jerusalem is the eternal and united capital of the State of Israel and that the city will never go back to the state it was before the Six-Day War in 1967. The French Foreign Ministry has spoken out against the settlement expansion, and British Foreign Minister William Hague described the Israeli decision as a provocation and added that this decision will have a direct impact on efforts to maintain security in the West Bank. In other provocations, the Israeli Air Force has held war games across the skies of Italy, flying F-16s fighting Falcons and aerial refueling Boeing jets, operating out of an Italian NATO base and was joined by Italian and German aircraft. The Israeli military has stated that the aerial manoeuvres and ballistic missile tests completed earlier in the week are all drills and training which were planned long ago. The timing is questionable, with rumblings leaking from Tel Aviv, rumouring a possible attack on Iranian nuclear facilities in the near future, a sentiment seemingly shared by the United States and United Kingdom, who feel a strike is necessary and imminent. The Israeli Army's home front has also been conducting drills earlier on Thursday morning in preparation for theoretical retaliatory strikes against them. Evacuation and absorption centres were opened across central Israel, with a 90-second siren sounding and gas masks being handed out. Two aid ships, the Tahrir and Suez, have reached international waters and are expected to reach the Gaza Strip in days. 27 human rights activists are on board the two ships, along with a cache of essential medical supplies. They said that their trip is non-violent and is meant to deliver humanitarian supplies to Gaza and challenge the illegal Israeli siege on the coastal region. Israeli Lieutenant Colonel Avital Leibovich told reporters by phone that Israeli soldiers intercepting the ships will have to assess the situation upon approaching the vessels and see if they are facing any violence. She stated that Israel imposed the siege on Gaza to prevent the smuggling of weapons to armed groups. Israel has stated that they are prepared to deliver the supplies, but will not allow the two ships to breach the blockade. They, of course, will wish to avoid a repeat of last year's incident, where the Turkish aid flotilla ship, the Mavi Marmara, was stormed by elite Israeli commandos. During the ensuing struggle and confusion, 9 Turkish activists were shot dead and several Israeli soldiers were injured. That's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Thursday, October 3rd daily roundup of news from the occupied Palestinian territories. We hope that you will join us again tomorrow. This was brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, William Gibson.
Afghanistan, Tuesday. NAIR is reporting the deaths of 2 soldiers of unspecified nationality from an IED attack in an undisclosed location in eastern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, today. A bomb attack hit a NATO logistics base in western Afghanistan, killing at least 7 people and wounding 3 more, according to Press TV. Officials say the blast ripped through the building of a private construction company in the city of Herat near Herat Airport. The company provides logistical support for the U.S.-led foreign forces in Afghanistan. A number of gunmen reportedly entered the compound after the blast and exchanged fire with Afghan security forces. Diyala Province, Iraq, today. A pair of near-simultaneous bombings killed 6 security guards who were waiting in line to pick up their paychecks outside an Iraqi military base, officials reported. At least 35 people were wounded in a double bombing near Bakuba, 60 kilometers northeast of Baghdad, said Diyala Health Director and spokesman Faris Al-Aziz Azawi. The attack started with a suicide bomber who joined the line of the guards known as Sawa and detonated himself at around 8 a.m., according to an Interior Ministry official. 2 minutes later, a car bomb blew up about 10 meters away. The dead were all members of Sawa or Awakening Councils. The Awakening Councils are former insurgents who sided with the U.S. in 2007 and are regarded as traitors by many in the country for this. Basra, Iraq, last night. 3 motorbike bombings in a southern Iraq port city of Basra killed at least 9 people and wounded at least 37, according to police and a doctor. Mr. Barack Obama, 8 years of war in Iraq didn't stop the violence, and U.S. troops can't control Afghanistan either. Now's the time to throw in the towel, bring all the troops home today.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com.
After 6 weeks of rapid expansion to cities and towns across the U.S., activists participating in the Occupy Wall Street movement witnessed some of the worst police violence on October 25th, when Oakland police reportedly used stun grenades, rubber bullets, and tear gas to disperse hundreds of mostly peaceful protesters exercising their right of free speech at an encampment near City Hall. In the midst of the Oakland clashes, former Marine and Iraq War veteran Scott Olson sustained a skull fracture when he was shot in the head by an unknown police projectile. In response to the aggressive police tactics, Occupy Oakland activists issued a call for a citywide general strike on November 2nd, where they invited all students to walk out of schools, the shutdown of the city's port, the 5th busiest shipping container port in the U.S., and a march in the downtown area outside banks, corporations, foreclosed homes, schools, and libraries. Some unions, including the Service Employees International Union, responded to the general strike call and are encouraging members to seek time off work to stand in support of the Occupy Oakland action. While the violence in Oakland captured headlines and sparked solidarity marches across the U.S. and the world, other police actions to evict Occupy activists occurred in many other cities, including Denver, Nashville, Atlanta, Chicago, and Cleveland. Your reporter spoke with journalist Arun Gupta, a founding editor of New York City's independent newspaper, and a co-founder of the Occupied Wall Street Journal, a newspaper published by activists in the occupied encampment in Lower Manhattan's Zuccotti Park. Here, Gupta talks about the reasons why he believes the Occupy protests have expanded so rapidly, and the effect of police tactics to suppress the new movement decrying corporate greed, economic inequality, and political corruption.
It has become an Occupy movement because people feel shut out, that they have no voice, they have no say, they have no control. People I've talked to in this occupation tour, me and my partner Michelle Fawcett have been doing, we've been to 10 different cities, and you hear variations on a theme, that my voice doesn't matter, my hands are tied, I have no control over my life. So you find a lot of people who are suffering, you know, that they have medical problems and can't get health insurance, or they've lost their job, or they're homeless, and they're part of the Occupy movement. But it's also an expression of the lack of social and political space to have a democratic voice. And I think this is why it has grown so explosively. There's something like over, 300 active occupations across the country, and then there's maybe close to 2,000 places where there's kind of people who are actively doing something in terms of having meetups or having like a regular weekly event or something to that effect. And it's really tapped into a deep well of anger and resentment, but also a lot of hope and inspiration, and that's why it's grown so explosively.
Over the past week, we've seen increased police crackdowns on the Occupy encampments all over this country, in Denver, Tennessee, Chicago, and certainly worst of all in Oakland, where there was wide reporting of the police violence there to evict Occupy activists from a park in Oakland. We saw the injury of Iraq war veteran Scott Olson, who sustained a serious skull fracture as a result. And those activists there in Oakland are now calling for a general strike on November 2nd. Where do you think all the police protester conflict is leading to? And how much does it really distract from the message that the protesters are out there to work on in the first place?
One of the definitions of the state is it has a monopoly on violence. And so it's not surprising that you're going to see police departments reacting with various degrees of force. I think what's interesting is how they react differently. And in New York, certainly, it was the police violence that actually built the movement. September 24th, that Saturday, that's where you get the infamous viral video of a officer nicknamed Tony Baloney who goes up and pepper sprays those women in the face who are doing nothing but standing on the sidewalk. Then the following week you had the 700 arrests on the Brooklyn Bridge. And I was down Zuccotti nearly every day. And after the Monday afterwards, you saw just explosive growth in terms of how the movement was taking off and the media response. What's going on in Oakland, that backfired also in terms of that has isolated the mayor and the police force. And to my understanding, at least a few days ago, to people who I was talking to, is there is a small occupation back there. Denver and Nashville, you know, Denver it appears to have been more successful. Same with Atlanta. Nashville, though, you actually have a judge who's issued orders stopping the police from arresting people because he's saying that the curfew order is illegal. Chicago and then Cleveland are very different cases as well. Cleveland, they have managed to pretty much shut down the occupation. They're allowed to have a tent there 24 hours, but only one tent. Chicago, the protesters cannot even take a space, and the city hasn't reacted violently. But at the same time, also, you know, let's realize we're talking about maybe less than 10 cities when you have probably over 300 occupations.
Where do you see this movement headed in the next couple of months, in these harsh winter months coming up? I'm sure there's a lot of strategizing going on. We also hear some talk about, you know, coordination nationally, maybe a convention of some type this July 4th, some kind of horizontal democratic process to come up with a list of specific demands and tactics in order to make those demands real across the country. What are you hearing?
Well, when I go around to cities, and cities I've been to include Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Toledo, Allentown, Youngstown, D.C., Baltimore, I ask people, so what about this convention? And to tell you the truth, only one person has heard of it. You know, the movement is going through certain growing pains that are very important. I think one of the biggest questions on the table, this is looking out a year, is the relation to the 2012 election, because you have a lot of liberal groups and unions who can be counted on to be kind of the ground troops for Obama, and the Democrats right now are very much supporting the Occupy movement. But what's going to happen come next summer? I've heard some people say, like, occupy the conventions. And, you know, I think that's a good idea for the Occupy movement, speaking as an observer, that it should be taken to the convention sites themselves, because, you know, it's a two-party system, though really there's only one party, the corporate capitalism, and people should be taking the protests right up to these two parties that are two wings of the same problem. How do you translate this into action? Is it policies? Is it institutions? Yes and no. You need to meet people's needs, right? Getting back to the original thing that, you know, people need health care, they need jobs, they need housing, they need education. But is it going to happen through the same norms, just through redistribution, or do we need to fundamentally think about a restructuring of social relations, of economic relations, of what is work like, what is society like? I think that's more the answer, but that's much more difficult, and it has to be something that happens in the doing and the making over time. But it's not going to be easy by any stretch.
That was journalist Arun Gupta, a founding editor of New York City's independent newspaper. For more news, analysis, and commentary on the Occupy Wall Street movement, visit our Between the Lines special Occupy Wall Street coverage and resource page at btlonline.org.
On the 2nd of November, a general strike shut down the port and the city of Oakland, California, in retaliation for the October 26th police violence against Occupy Oakland that left Scott Olson, an Iraq War veteran and Occupy Oakland protester, seriously wounded with a direct hit to the head from either a tear gas or a flashbang grenade fired from a heavy launcher. At the time of the general strike, he was unable to speak. The general strike was so successful that an estimated 10,000 protesters swarmed over the city and shut down the Bay Bridge. They closed the port entirely. They closed every bank in the city of Oakland, and they closed so many other businesses that even protesters couldn't buy a snack in a store. A rumor went out in Oakland that Whole Foods had threatened to fire any employee who didn't work on a day of the general strike. That cost Whole Foods a pile of broken windows and giant strike graffiti. Oakland's TV7 claims that the story was false, but I can't verify that. A Wells Fargo bank at 12th and Broadway also had their windows smashed, and a Citibank was also marched on. Here in D.C., there were solidarity protests supporting Occupy Oakland and supporting the general strike in Oakland. First, protesters from Occupy DC marched down the Department of Justice demanding federal intervention against the city of Oakland. The Justice Department shut the giant gates of justice in their faces.
Racist brutality.
Is one of the many forms.
Of racist systematic violence.
Under this very profitable.
Prison system.
Victims are largely people of color.
Working class people.
this year comes from.
Happy police presence.
Happy police presence.
Poor working class.
Poor working class.
Predominantly black neighborhoods.
Predominantly black neighborhoods.
At the conclusion of the protest at the Department of Justice, Occupy DC marched to Freedom Plaza, joining up with both Stop the Machine and the Communication Workers of America, who still haven't gotten a fair deal out of Verizon.
Now they're attempting to strip away 50 years of bargaining benefits against the people who built this company. They are so greedy. They think nothing of destroying the standard of living of the workers, and you are the middle class in this country.
They marched on a Verizon Wireless store with a banner that said Vera Greedy Wireless instead of Verizon Wireless.
There's Target, Verizon Wireless store, massive crowd pouring in.
After leaving the siege of the Verizon Wireless store, the Communication Workers of America, Occupy DC, and people from Stop the Machine marched on to their ultimate target of the night, the notorious United States Chamber of Commerce. Upon arrival, people started knocking and beating on the doors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, where once again, as always, Tom Donahue, the man who said there should be more foreclosures so the houses could be sold to foreign investors, refused to come out and speak with protesters. Seems to me that if you want the doors of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to open when you knock on them, you have to do the knocking with either a money bag or a battering ram. Open up. Open.
Come on, guys. Ring the doorbell.
Big crowd coming in behind. Let's try the old pooch.
You heard that? Neither the Occupy movement nor the unions are going to forget anytime soon about the brutality of the Oakland police and the injury they did to Scott Olson at Occupy Oakland. This is the March for Jobs and Justice in solidarity with the Occupy movement coming out of Howard University.
99%. We are the 99%.
That was the 28th of October. The march started at Howard University and passed through both the Occupy DC encampment at McPherson Square and the Stop the Machine encampment on Freedom Plaza before marching across the U.S. Chamber of Commerce across from the White House.
We want
job and justice.
We want
job and justice.
We want
job and justice.
We want you to know that the American people, the 99% of the people who own less than 2% of the wealth, demand that you act for us.
Yes.
You spread the love. Spread the $400 billion worth of property that you're sitting on is given to the American people. Yeah. We want good jobs. We want fair jobs. We want jobs for all.
Jobs for black people.
Jobs for white people.
Jobs for white people.
Jobs for brown people.
Jobs for brown people.
Jobs for red people.
Jobs for red people.
Jobs for yellow people.
Jobs for yellow people.
Jobs for men.
Jobs for men.
Jobs for women.
Jobs for women.
Jobs for young people.
Jobs for young people.
Jobs for older people.
Jobs for older people.
We want jobs and justice.
Jobs and justice.
We want it.
You know, for Freedom Plaza, this is the fourth time we've come to the Chamber of Commerce. Because fifth time. We come so often. They are our favorite because they are the corporate bully of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
They are the corporate bully. When we're trying to end corporate power, who do you go after? You go after the head of the bullies.
That's right.
You face the head of the bullies.
That's right.
The guy in here we want to see removed, Tom Donahue.
Ooh.
Tom Donahue. Shame on you, Tom Donahue.
Shame on you, Tom Donahue. Shame on you, Tom Donahue. Shame on you, Tom Donahue. Shame on you, Tom Donahue.
What did he do?
Tell us what
Tom Donahue has corrupted elections across the country. Here's what they do to the Chamber of Commerce. They go into state Supreme Court races in states across the country. In the last few weeks of a race, they target the most progressive, civil rights-oriented, consumer-oriented justice in that court with a $1 million campaign against them. No time to fundraise, no time to respond, and they put in place a corporate justice. They have transitioned over 20 states to corporate courts because of that kind of strategy of corruption. And they do it by hiding their money. They create these fake groups like Citizens for a Strong Ohio. It took 5 years of litigation to find out who those citizens were. Those citizens were banks, pharmaceuticals, for-profit hospitals, all the big business interests of those citizens, and they changed that court. They changed that court. It took a judge threatening a $25,000 a day fine for us to find out that truth. And they've done that across the country. And now they're polluting our elections with money from out of the country.
Yeah.
Because they're a transnational corporation. They charge membership fees to oil companies that are run by Gulf cartels. They take the money into their general fund and use that money to fund campaigns. That's what this they do. And that's against the law.
Yeah.
These guys are lawbreakers. They should be put in criminal. And Tom Donahue should be removed.
Heard about the evils that Tom Donahue represents. Now, trained as a lawyer, I want to defend Tom Donahue. I want to say something in this favor. What has he done good? He has united us.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to say this about the Chamber of Commerce. This Chamber of Commerce is no different from any other Chamber of Commerce. Let's not be fooled. I was working in Gadsden County, Florida, which is a 70% black county in Florida. Chamber of Commerce, if you get the book from that, the Chamber of Commerce, you would think that there were no black people in Gadsden County.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not be fooled about the problem. This is only part of the problem.
I hear you.
Only part of the problem. Free D.C. Obama's not going to free a damn thing.
We need to be clear on that
as he runs for re-election. I don't care if Michelle Bachmann gets in there. I don't care about the plantation burning. Let it burn.
Yeah.
Let it burn.
Yeah.
And you have to take that same position. This is not about saving democracy. When was America ever a democracy? When? You tell me when it wasn't a corporation.
Debt owed on student loans in the U.S. has surged past $1 trillion, placing another drag on a stagnant economy. College students are now borrowing for college at twice the rate they did in the late 1990s, resulting in a doubling of the student loan debt in the last 5 years. Since 2000, college enrollment has risen 38%, while little new financial aid was available to help students pay for increased tuition costs. According to AlterNet, 11% of all student loan payments are 90 days late, rivaling late payments on credit cards. The squeeze on college graduates will only get worse as 20-somethings face record unemployment and a crowded job market. Students with the highest default rate on college loans were those who attended for-profit institutions such as the University of Phoenix, which gets 90% of its revenues from the federal government. Unlike stressed homeowners, there is little young people can do to escape loan collectors on student debt. In the wake of persistently high unemployment, there are new calls for student loan forgiveness. An online petition, which received over 300,000 signatures, supports student loan forgiveness as a measure that could trigger economic stimulus. A write-off of student loan debt could aid 35 million young adults by freeing up $400 to $1,000 a month in funds that could be spent on goods and services, helping to boost the stagnant economy. Acknowledging the problem, President Obama recently issued an executive order that will reduce monthly student loan payments from 15% to 10% of their discretionary income. Beginning next year, The order will also allow qualified students to consolidate their loans. Those loans will be forgiven if not paid off in 20 years instead of the current 25 years.
The 28th of October, Occupy DC backed up student protesters who marched on Sallie Mae, demanding the forgiveness or repudiation of crippling student debt. While students had planned to enter the building and discuss this with the bosses at Sallie Mae, cops knew they were coming and it bogged down into a siege of the building. All the doors, all the way around, nothing allowed in or out. There was considerable aggression on the part of some of the police and a display of heavy riot weapons. Heavy weapons! Heavy weapons brought out!
Dear police!
Dear police!
There are children here!
There are children here!
Pregnant women here!
There are pregnant women here!
What's in that canister?
I don't want it near me.
Probably a mix of pepper spray and CS.
Department of Homeland Security.
Remember Oakland. Remember Oakland.
Shelter for the city of Oakland. I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly.
October 26th, in Oakland, California, riot police opened fire on Occupy Oakland to drive protesters from the park, shooting at point blank range with tear gas grenades and flashbang grenades. Iraq War veteran Scott Olson took a direct hit from one of these projectiles to the head. As this is being recorded, he still cannot speak because of brain damage. He almost died. The brutality in Oakland did not deter protesters there from immediately seeking to retake the exact same place. And the threat of the same in D.C. did not deter student protesters outside Sallie Mae. Since Sallie Mae officials locked up the building, refusing to meet with protesters, protesters refused to allow them to leave the building or to accept any deliveries.
You can't get out. It's a seizure. You can't get out. We can't get in. You can't get out. We can't get in. You can't get out.
Back door is covered. The garage. You gotta sit in.
We can't get out. We can't get in. You can't get out. We can't get in. You can't get out.
Eventually, there was a nasty pushing incident at one of the back doors where the cops had to fight like hell to get about six people out. At one point, a trumpet belonging to a member of the brass band was smashed by the police. It may have been in that incident, or it may have been during an earlier pushing match during the inbound march. I'm not sure which. Here's what the showdown at the back door sounded like. That was the only time cops were able to force their way through with anyone trying to get out of the building. The siege was lifted at about 5 p.m. as protesters marched back to their base at McPherson Square. Near the beginning of the siege of Sallie Mae, one of the students had this to say about Sallie Mae's attitude about forgiving outrageous, crippling student debt, in some cases as much as $100,000. Debt so high, people would be better off buying a house and working at McDonald's in some cases. You heard that, Sallie Mae, and you heard that, college administrators. The Occupy movements are not going to be dispersed by the escalating police violence. No amount of force can stop a movement backed by 37% of the American public. And people are demanding that something be done about this outrageous debt. Forgive the student debt, Well, just as the protesters who besieged your headquarters promised on the 28th of October, they will return. If bailouts are good enough for bankers, they're good enough for students.
DJ Munch, Chocolate City, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Something.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize,
yeah,
soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
Keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart, it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holla black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar, Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Oversee your plantation mentality, results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they wanna come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me.
They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists out to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmarts in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
On the 20th of September, I received a robotic survey call from the Consumer Energy Alliance. They started with 2 questions, quote, do you believe gas prices are too high, and quote, do you believe unemployment is too high? Recognizing that this had to be a fake industry push-pull, I answered no to both questions, even though Wall Street has indeed thrown far too many people out of work. I then managed to start recording the rest of this phony so-called survey, microphone to telephone. Turns out the whole survey is about pressuring the Department of State to approve that nasty tar sands oil pipeline that 1,250 people were arrested in front of the White House saying no to. Here's what my microphone got.
Reduce U.S. dependence on imports from the Middle East. To build this importing pipeline, TransCanada must receive a permit from the Department of State that will allow it to cross the border from Canada to the U.S. The Department of State is currently soliciting public comments on whether to grant the permit and allow TransCanada to build the pipeline and put thousands of Americans to work. May we have your permission to relay your support for this vital pipeline?
No, you may not. I oppose the pipeline and I wish the project would be blocked.
Please say yes, no,
no.
Repeat, now.
No.
Would you like more information on
no.
oil and gas production and the jobs that it can create?
No.
male?
Yes.
Are you 50 years of age or older?
No.
Thank you for your time and views. This survey was conducted by the Consumer Energy Alliance. Goodbye. 7-1.
I should have gotten a recording more quickly.
It looks to me like the Consumer Energy Alliance is desperate to keep alive our bad romance with fossil fuels and dirty oil. No, I wasn't going to let them falsely tell the Department of State that I support the filthy Alberta tar sands mining. I'd rather see gasoline cost $10 a gallon than support a pipeline whose contributions to global warming is going to flood every coastal city, including mine.